This is a Cyber Union talk show for Monday, December 12th, 2011. Live from Guatemala. Viva para Guatemala.
Hello and welcome to Cyber Unions. I'm Walton in Glasgow, Scotland, and with me is Stephen in
Guatemala, no longer in Boston.
Well, Stephen, that's awesome to hear your voice after so long. We thought we had lost you to the third world there. You kind of disappeared from cyberspace and everything went quiet for a couple of weeks, and I wasn't sure if we'd ever hear back from you. So how are you and how's Guatemala?
Good. I'm doing a lot better now that I'm finally in here a little over a week in country. It's been quite exhausting, actually. Mostly because actually my flight here was a real pain in the ass. It happened to be, I was taking American Airlines the day before they actually went bankrupt or filed for bankruptcy. And my flight leaving Boston left 45 minutes late. But the thing that really pissed me off is nobody told me that there was a weight limit that on the country of Guatemala. So I couldn't bring anything over 75 pounds, no matter what, even if I was willing to pay for it. And I had one bag that was 93 pounds. So I had to actually like throw away a blanket. I had to throw away a blanket, my baseball glove. Then I had to take all my books out and just buy a new bag to put them in. And I was just like going nuts. And then when I got to Miami, flying from Miami to Guatemala, my flight, we were on the plane. And they loaded up all the luggage, and they realized that they didn't have it done correctly, so they unloaded it all. So it took us another hour and a half of sitting in the terminal. And, like, we're on the plane but not leaving for another hour and a half before we left for Guatemala. So I was just like, by the time I got to Guatemala City, I was exhausted.
That sounds like great fun.
Yeah, but it was really cool. My friend Arch GT from Identica was really cool. He lives in Guatemala City, and he came to the airport to meet me there, and I stayed at his place with his family. Awesome family. Like, it was just a really great time hanging out with him and meeting up with some people I had met back in June when I was coming back from Guatemala. And I had a lot of fun. It was really cool. I had Arch GT had actually gone to school at the USAC, which is the University of San Carlos. It's basically the public school of Guatemala. And he took me around the campus. Well, he had a meeting, and he said, you know, go explore. And I just kind of started walking around taking pictures. I should probably post them up. But there are all these beautiful murals across the campus, something that I've never seen in the States at all, ever. And I mean, murals of like Karl Marx with Arbenz, who is the president that the U.S. Through the CIA took out because they were concerned that he was connected with communist Russia, and turns out there was no evidence that even proved it. It was just a natural, actual socialist revolution. So it was really kind of cool to see all this really historic stuff that I'm becoming familiar with over the last couple of months, and seeing beautiful paintings. They're really amazing. And I mean, the campus is huge. It actually makes public schools in Boston or Massachusetts look pretty pathetic, to be honest. But the ones that were really inspiring were a lot of the student activists that were on that campus who had been killed there. And a number of them were poets. A number of them were just like activists within like the agricultural departments and all this stuff. And there's just some really awesome stories that come behind it. It was really amazing, to be honest. I was overwhelmed with it. So I got to stay in Guatemala City for a couple of days. 2 days, I think it was. And I was almost going to stay longer just because I was really enjoying Arch GT's family. He's got great kids and really energy, a lot of energy, and his wife made some really great food for me. They actually made their own, they make their own soy milk, and I found out their process of doing it, and from it they were, because they know I'm vegan, they were making me these potato soy patties that were really delicious. I've never had them before, and now I know how to make soy milk directly from soybeans in a pretty easy process. I mean, it takes like a half a day because you have to let it soak for a while and everything, but it was pretty cool. So I was really impressed, and it's really, really nice to have that. On my way out, his grandmother who lives there gave me a gift, which was really nice, and I got to get back down there and visit them again. They're a lot of fun. So it's been cool. And Arch, if people didn't know, is deeply involved in the free software movement here in Guatemala, and has been really helpful with connecting with me with other folks in the area that are going to be helpful for the project that I'm trying to do. So
cool. So there's a free software movement in Guatemala, is there?
Yeah, and in fact, the week before I got here, they had their Guatemalan Free Software Congress, and I think it was their first one that they had.
Brilliant.
So it's a growing thing, and there's a professor at the Usak in Shayla, which is about an hour and a half away from here, that Arch had got me in touch with, and I haven't met with him yet, but he's deeply involved in the free software movement, and I want to connect with him to try to network and find out, you know, what other people in this area that I'm in might be connected to the free software movement as well. So I'm taking my time with doing this project because I don't want to rush into it and don't want to lose money right off the bat and see where it goes. So, but it's been cool, and my friend Patrick's been a lot of fun. He's the one that runs the school here, the El Migrante Spanish School, which is going along well. I'm in my fourth day, and and people have already told me.
I was going to ask about that. How are you coping with the language? Because I can imagine that being a bit of a challenge, suddenly being in a country where it's not English speaking.
Yeah, I mean, at first it was a big challenge. It was very frustrating for me and very stressful because I was trying to handle so many things. So like when I got to the northern or western part of Guatemala where I am now, I was really stressed because I'm like trying to figure out how to learn a language, how to learn the culture, and trying to figure out how to do this project. And it was just so much that was overwhelming me. But fortunately, I just finished my fourth day of class today, and I feel much more confident. I feel like where I was at the end of June when I had just done a week there, and a lot more is coming to me, and I'm practicing and trying to speak more with a lot of people in the area. It has hampered me in one sense, is that I don't feel comfortable traveling outside the city yet because I don't know, like I feel like I could get lost in the conversation and not know how to get somewhere. And
You might get physically lost and not be able to ask for directions and end up in entirely the wrong place.
Yeah, and that's the concern that I have. And also what's really cool is this area, there are a lot of different movements and activists and organizations, and I've had the chance to meet a number of them already in this short time that I've been here. One of Patrick's friends who works with the diocese. The diocese here in the town, San Marcos, is more or less, I mean, I'm not sure how well known it is, but it's more or less liberation theology. And there's a long history of developing cooperatives, which is great. And this guy, Nate, works with the Mennonite Central Committee through the Catholic Diocese of developing cooperatives up in the Highlands. And one of the cooperatives they has is trout, but they have a number of other ones, and they're looking for markets to sell these goods across the border in Mexico as well, because the Highlands are very close to the border to Mexico. And it's really interesting. So I'm going to be meeting with him to kind of get a bit of the history, because he's been in country for about 5.5 or 6 years knows a lot of the history of the cooperatives, that which date back to Arbenz, which I think was the 1950s, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been a great experience. It's been a lot of stress at certain times, but honestly, learning a lot. And there are a number of books that I already have on my list that I need to read. Some that I knew about before getting here that I just never read, which is like Bitter Fruit, which is a phenomenal book from what I've been told about Chiquita Banana, which used to be known as United Fruit, that when Arbenz was legitimately elected, was working with the CIA to get Arbenz taken out. And it's supposed to be a great book. And the cool thing is I've been finding some of the radical connections too. Like in the city of Shayla, there's a place called Cafe Red, which is a pretty cool place. And it's a place that works with a lot of ex-immigrants that have come back from the States, and utilizing the skills that they learned in the States to put them to use into Guatemala, which is really amazing to see that practice coming in place, since there's still a tremendous amount of people that try to emigrate to the United States from here. It's really eye-opening in a lot of ways. I'm just starting to get used to the town, just starting to get familiar and knowing how to walk around, which has been, like, honestly, like when I first got here, I just felt so lost. I felt like literally I'm in a different world and I don't know this and I don't have a home to go back to. And it's just like, wow, you know? But yeah, so I mean,
it all sounds really, really exciting.
It is, and I'm anxious to learn a lot more and to see where it goes, and that's the part that's going to be really fun and exciting. So
okay, so and the plan is to still try and get some kind of cooperative internet cafe up running Linux. Is that right?
Yeah, that is, and that's why I want to connect with these a lot of my friends who already are connected with the free software movement. And instead of trying to start something on my own, I don't want to do that. That doesn't seem right to me. It seems that I should be working with the community and developing the community, and that's what I want to do. It'll be interesting because I don't know what these people, what many of the people that are in this area's perspectives are on it. I mean, most of the cafes in this place that I've even been to are running Windows still. And, you know, the idea of Linux is not even, it's not even a thought because nobody around here really knows about it. And, But there are a lot of people that are interested in it. And there are a number of different groups that might be interested in adopting it in their offices too, which might be a pretty cool experiment to see if it can expand into reaching social movement organizations and other, you know, human rights organizations too.
Okay, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah. So since I've been gone, I understand that you did a show on your own, which was cool. what else have you been up to?
Well, firstly, you know, sorry to everyone for missing the show last week. I managed one show on my own. And then the week after that, I was hoping Stephen would be back, and he wasn't. We still didn't have a connection to Guatemala. And I was actually a little bit ill, so I was just not up to sitting and talking to you alone again. doing a show on my own was interesting. It was a strange experience, and I had to learn Audacity in a hurry because I'd never really put a show together technically using Audacity. And what fantastic software! I just kind of read through the documentation, and it really is quite user friendly, and there's a lot you can do with it. I'm still not great at it, but it's great for putting things together. And I've actually been using it quite a bit in the past couple of weeks because my colleagues at Unite Scotland decided that they wanted to do a podcast, inspired partly because they'd listened to this one, and you know, I kind of explained
really
to them that it's tech. Yeah, they'd been listening to Cyber Unions, and I explained to them that it's popular, people listen to it, you get good feedback, and it's technically not too difficult. So I was very proud of them because I kind of explained to them how to use Audacity to record a call, and they're on their second podcast. The first one was it was released just before the November 30th strike, so it was about that strike and also about the Sparks dispute, which is ongoing in the UK. And then I think just yesterday they released the second podcast, which was about the Greek crisis, and they did a voice over internet interview with a sociologist in Athens, which was really, really interesting as well. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that podcast. I'm really pleased with them for getting that off the ground, and they've actually got a lot of really interesting people lined up that they want to speak to. I know that they've got interviews with Richard Murphy, who's a tax expert in the UK, about tax dodging and essentially how the deficit in the UK could be funded if we collected tax properly. And there's a lot of interesting stuff they've got lined up. I've been providing some technical support with the editing and all of that. So,
that's so great.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, I was going to ask it. So you're using Audacity to do the editing. Have you been talking to these guys about trying, or guys and gals for that matter, for trying to use other free software tools besides this Audacity?
Think I mentioned a few shows ago that I installed Ubuntu on their netbooks.
Oh, that's right.
And so they actually recorded the whole show on the netbooks running Ubuntu. So
that's awesome.
It's going well. It's going well. The free software thing's going well. I think it helps if you can show someone something really practical that you can do with it.
Yeah.
Rather than necessarily saying you should switch to free software for, you know, ideological reasons, and if you can show someone how you can do something really practical with it, then they tend to like it. So they like everything about Ubuntu, including the little tune that it plays when it starts up.
I haven't heard that in ages, but yeah, that's funny. that's nice.
The other thing that's worth reporting on is the November the 30th strike, which was very, very big. It's hard to say how big it was because the government, being a Tory government, says it wasn't big at all, and the union say it was massive. So it was, I mean, you know, and I've only got my perspective, but I spent that day filming picket lines. I started at 7 in the morning, went out with a camera, and we traveled from picket line to picket line, and basically every town we went to, there were just picket lines outside the schools, outside the council depots, and outside all the hospitals, and there were people there. And the fantastic thing about it was there was a huge amount of public support. Some of the right-wing newspapers had polls on their websites. I think the Daily Mail, for example, had a poll asking its readers, do you support the strike? And, you know, when it went to sort of 81% in favor, they took the poll off their website because you know, it was really, really heartening to see, because you know, people were hooting, people were waving, everyone was cheering for the pickets. Yeah, what happened was generally people picketed in the morning, and then around about lunchtime they went to the nearest big town and joined a big march. So I visited a lot of pickets in the morning, and then I went to the march in Glasgow, and there were thousands of people there. It was a really great march because of all the public support. And most cities were like that. Most cities had sort of thousands and thousands of people. It's clearly had an effect, because the government has just come back with a new pensions offer, which unfortunately is not good, because what they're attempting to do is they've got a new pensions offer for the NHS for lower paid staff. So, you know, they're attempting to split the public sector and get, you know, drive wages between those who are paid above the average wage and those who are paid below it, and kind of keep them divided also from people who work for local authorities and for other public sector organizations. However, the fact that they're forced to do that is it's a demonstration that taking industrial action works. It's been really important, actually, because this is it's been a great confidence booster for trade unions, because this is the biggest mobilization of the unions for a very long time, if not since 1926, certainly since the 1970s. And because unions have been in decline since about 1979, I think we weren't sure if we were still able to mobilize people and mobilize public support. And the fact that we've been able to do that, I think shows that, I think it's given us a lot of confidence. We realize that you know, you can't squander that, but we still have organizing power, and we have credibility in society, and we can organize around issues, and there are things that we can do. And I think that that confidence boost is really helping, because a number of private sector pensions disputes are also coming, are also coming to the fore now. There was one just today, Argos, which is a wholesale shop. There's a pensions dispute there, which is just been announced, I think, today or yesterday. Unilever, another big company, pensions dispute. So it looks like it's crossing from the public sector into the private sector, and that there's going to be a big fight with the government as well as with private sector employers who are being opportunistic about the austerity. So all of that's happening. All of that's interesting. The other thing that's really interesting is the whole Eurozone crisis, which it's a strange thing, because it's both boring and terrible.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard work to follow sometimes, because it's...
Well, I mean, isn't your biggest the biggest people that are trying to resolve it amongst a bunch of conservatives? So they're always going to have some pretty boring solutions anyhow.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I remember correctly, of the 27 member states of the European Union, 24 of them are dominated by conservative parties, and conservative thinking is taking over. The biggest fear is that in order for the crisis to be resolved, individual countries in Europe are going to need to lose sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And they're going to lose sovereignty to a neoliberal settlement, essentially. Probably a lot of authority will go to Germany and France, and they will probably get the authority to veto individual countries' budgets, which will make any kind of social democratic measure extremely difficult. So it's interesting, and I don't want to say too much about it, because it's very, very complex at the moment, and we don't know what's going to happen. But clearly the victims are going to be ordinary people, and clearly there's going to be a massive fight back. It actually was interesting listening to the Unite Scotland podcast about Greece, because it's a bit of a foretaste of what I think we can expect in other parts of Europe. There's going to be a massive fight back, but it's going to be difficult times for a lot of people. I think we're going to see massive wage restraint, large cuts in all sorts of services, and essentially a collapse of the social contract. What that will mean is going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's everything's happening like that around the world too. So, but I mean, unfortunately, I guess the European states are not in the position to actually be creative. Instead, they're just being destructive. You know, I think there are plenty of people out there who have the money and who have the wealth that just need to you know, pay up.
Yeah, there's a capital strike. You know, because this isn't a Eurozone problem. The problem is currently manifesting in the Eurozone, but it's a problem of capitalism. It's broken. And basically, there's too much capital in the world, and because of the whole crisis of underproduction or overproduction or underconsumption, there is nowhere profitable to invest excess capital anymore. Mm-hmm. And so those who have capital are holding onto it, and they're not investing it.
Well,
it's because of that capital strike that no one has any money.
They probably all read Ayn Rand, The Fountainhead, and just figured.
I think they did.
It's like, this is the way to do it.
Well, they are all making profits still. You know, yeah. It's not like the big corporations are struggling, and the bankers are getting their bonuses. The energy companies, in particular, are making massive profits, just ripping people off. And basically, it's become wholesale corporate looting. They're just using the opportunity to loot as much from people as possible. So not the best of times, I guess.
No, certainly not. Well, it sounds really interesting. I was there any connection with the November 30th strike and any of the Occupy movements in the UK at all?
Definitely. The Occupy were out on they came along to picket lines, and all the marches had sort of an Occupy people from Occupy on the marches. We've seen actually quite a lot of that. The other big dispute, which is I mentioned this, I think, two, three weeks ago, is the Sparks dispute, the electricians who work on construction sites. That is still ongoing, and that's going to be big because there is a really, really militant rank and file movement who are taking wildcat action. And the Occupy has been supporting them in a lot of their struggles. There's been sort of occupations of building sites and pickets outside of corporate offices. Balfour Beatty is the company. They've had their offices picketed. That is going to be a very significant action, I think. We're going to see some really, really interesting developments in that dispute. So it's really worth watching it. What happened there was Unite. These are Unite members. So Unite balloted for industrial action, for strike action, and there was sort of 81% in favor. But because of the restrictive anti-union laws, the ballot was thrown out. It wasn't recognized. So the Sparks took unofficial action. There's going to be another ballot, they're not going to go away. They're not going to accept the 30% pay cut that the construction companies are trying to impose on them.
That's great to hear. Actually, you telling me about Occupy is really the first thing. I haven't been able to even keep up on the Occupy movement in the States. The only thing I heard late recently was that the Boston mayor has given them a deadline of apparently tonight. But it's interesting to see what's going on, because they're still gonna exist. I don't question that. It's just I leave the country and all of a sudden shit starts hitting the fan.
Yeah.
So I guess they can't blame me. So that's the important thing. But no, it sounds great. I mean, this is good. We'll have to keep up on things going in this country too, because I haven't even actually heard any of the details of any of the labor and social movements going on here in Guatemala and the Central American regions. I know there's some stuff going on, but I'll definitely be reporting on some of that stuff as it happens. It's a bit of a different world down here when it comes to labor struggles and the way labor is perceived in the public and how things go on. So I'm learning it as we go. So, but it sounds like you've gotten your hands full, and I too, this will be for an interesting couple of weeks to months to who knows how long I'll be down here.
Yeah, no, it's crazy busy here. Just to answer your question about what's happening with Occupy, there's a call to reoccupy.
Nice. Because,
as you know, various occupiers in different cities have been forced out of the places where they were, and there was a big crackdown a couple of weeks ago. So there's a call to reoccupy on the 17th of December to identify new sites and to kind of have a concerted effort to reoccupy those spaces. So we will.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And if anything happens down here, I'll definitely report on it and let you guys all know what's going on, guys and gals for that matter. So, well, that's great, Walton. It's great to hear you again. And I'm glad to be back on the inner tubes? It's not really the air, is it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, well, I was actually going to say, how are you connecting? Because it sounds really good to me. It's an excellent connection. How are you connecting?
Surprisingly, a USB modem down here on my laptop. I have to be in a different building, though. Like the room that I'm staying in, the house I'm staying in, I have a very weak connection. Okay. I could communicate, but it'd be choppy. And I'm over in the school that I'm taking the classes in, and Patrick let me use his room to connect with so I could do the show, which is great. So I thank him for giving me the space.
Okay. Well, that's excellent. Fantastic to hear you. You disappeared. It was strange not seeing you sort of on Identica and all the various networks that you're usually on permanently.
Yeah, I know.
So yeah, it went quiet for a while, and it was just like something missing from the internet. So good to have you back.
Well, thank you. I'll try to reconnect with the other group soon. It's just a matter of getting a more of a consistent connection and hopefully getting an apartment soon so I can actually get a connection to that house directly and not have to be using a USB modem all the time. But yeah, no, I'm happy to be back and hopefully to be back on engaging with everybody. I've kind of missed the community a lot. I feel I've been doing a disservice. So hopefully I'll get back into things soon and it'll be very exciting.
All right. Excellent. Shall we end it there?
I think we shall. Adios, mi amigos, compañeros de luchas.
And goodbye to everyone, and especially to everyone in Scotland who's just lived through Hurricane Ballbag, which is the biggest storm we've had in ages, which has just died down about half an hour ago.
So, oh, wow. Good. All right, man. I'll see you next week.
All right. Cheers.